afternoon, everybody. This is Random Assignment. Thanks for tuning in. My name is Bob Bowden. I'm with Corey DeAngelis. Corey, what's going on, man?
Hey, not much. I'm just chilling here in D.C., and it's been a pretty fun week watching these things going on in different states like Arizona, for example, which we talked about last week, where Governor Ducey announced a program to allow families to take $7,000 to a private school if they disagree with the COVID restrictions in the public schools. Or to be clear, it's if they are in a school that is not following state law when it comes to the COVID restrictions. So that could be mandatory masking or not having in-person instruction, for a couple of examples. So I've been watching that kind of stuff and seeing if it's going to happen in other places too.
Yes, I mean, to me, this week anyway, and maybe in the month, has been dominated by these masks and vaccine stories. And I know we were emailing before the show, and you're kind of like, is like everything I was sending you was like mask, vaccine, vaccine, mask, all of these stories about schools. Where is the evidence these things even work? Okay, so, you know, with state after state passing mandates, we now have 14 states plus D.C. mandating masks in public schools. 14 states. In fact, I made the list here just in case people at home are
this
wanting
one?
To be. There you go. That's right. If they can see that, that's basically the map. That's from a USA Today piece showing which states. But for those who can't see it, the 14 states are Massachusetts, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Delaware, Virginia, Illinois, Kentucky, Louisiana, Nevada, Washington, Oregon, California, Hawaii. Those 14 states plus DC are mandating masks in public schools. Now, we have a federal footprint on this, and we have also lots of questions about the studies. And I just wanted to talk first about this idea of, you know, with all these mandates proliferating, what is the science on masks in schools? And what I'm finding, someone correct me if I'm wrong, believe me, I'm open-minded, but I'm finding extremely thin for a group that normally talks about putting science first, let's believe in the science, let's trust the science. I am finding extremely thin science regarding masks in schools. Beginning with this story, this is from Zero Hedge just 4 days ago, I wanted to bring up first, from August 21st. CDC buries study finding that student masking has, quote, no statistically significant benefit. It says less than 3 months ago, the CDC published a mostly ignored large-scale study of COVID-19 transmission in U.S. schools and concluded that while masking then unvaccinated teachers and improving ventilation was associated with lower levels of virus transmission in schools, it did not find a statistically significant benefit with wearing masks. For some reason, I'm having trouble pronouncing statistically. Nevertheless, we also then that triggered, I don't know what triggered, which triggered what in terms of order, maybe triggers the wrong word, but there was, go ahead.
I want to point out what they meant by actually burying the finding here in the CDC report. They linked to the CDC report, which was a large scale study in Georgia from November 16th to December 11th, 2020. When you go to the abstract and look for the findings, all it says is, quote, COVID-19 incidence was 37% lower in schools that required teachers and staff members to use masks and 39% lower in schools that improved ventilation. Ventilation strategies associated with lower school incidence included dilution methods alone, 35% lower incidence, or in combination with filtration methods, 48% lower incidence. But there's no indication here of the non-statistically significant relationship between student mask mandates and COVID transmission in the schools. But if you go to the actual full length study, you just do a control F for not statistically significant, you'll find it towards the end in the discussion section. It says the 21% lower incidence in schools that required mask use among students was not statistically significant compared with schools where mask use was optional. And for listeners who don't know what statistically significant means, is the difference between the two averages in case rates in the schools with or without masks forced on students could not be said to be statistically, cannot be said to be statistically different from zero.
Right. Meaning, in other words, so, there are tiny differences oftentimes those tiny, small differences are written off as being sometimes effects that are not causal. They are kind of random effects, if you will. And in this case, as you'd explained, that and first of all, it's one of the reasons people love watching your Twitter feed, Corey, and watching you on Random Assignment is that kind of detail that you just pulled up. I was going to refer mostly to the news stories, and you went to the actual CDC report.
Yeah, so you cannot say that these incidence rates were different statistically between right. the two groups, and they did not mention that in the abstract of the report. So that's where you get this kind of headline here, where it says they buried the finding. Right.
No, I'm glad you showed that. And then New York Magazine had its own version of this, which was a more mild framing of it. You had it up there a second ago. The science remains uncertain of masking kids at school. So understand, we've just had 14 governors mandate this across the country, as well as plenty of other school districts that are not in those 14 states. And it begs the question on what basis they're doing this. I'm not finding any. Are we ignoring other studies, Corey, that you know of? You've ignored such and such study that did show a correlation between student mask mandates. I mean, I know that we talked about one on a previous program where you pointed out that, I forgot what state that was in. Was it Virginia? You pointed out actually that was a poor...
Here's another study that I know of finding no statistically significant difference with Emily Oster, Brown University economist, as the lead researcher. They've been tracking this data at the COVID school response dashboard at Brown University for months, for over a year now, I think. And they published findings, and they said in their abstract that they did not find any correlations with COVID case rates for students with mask mandates. So they're again finding no statistically significant difference in their study and with students in Florida, New York, and Massachusetts, no statistically significant difference between school in COVID case rates in schools that mandated masks and schools that did not mandate masks. So this is another null result finding from this study led by Emily Oster.
Yes, that's the one that that Governor DeSantis had cited and we talked about. But I think there was also another study that seemed to claim the opposite, seemed to claim there was a correlation. And then you showed a glaring methodological flaw.
Yeah. Yeah, this was a Washington Post article. This was a Washington Post article. Let me find it really quickly. Mask. The headline was something like, we studied a million students, masks work or something. And the problem was they only looked at schools in North Carolina that had mask mandates. They did not have a control group where they just said, oh, well, all of these schools have pretty low mask rate, case rates for the students. It must be that the mask mandate did it. That's called selecting on the independent variable. They have no control group whatsoever. And it's worse than mere correlation because you don't know what the case rate. They could have low case rates in the schools without masks too, but they didn't have a comparison group.
All right. So thanks for reminding me. It was actually North Carolina, not Virginia. I was close though. I was one state away. So I wanted to claim that sort of rationalization of my error. At any rate, so we have, I find it puzzling. I don't know about you. I don't know about our viewers and listeners to watch all these mandates roll out with, as far as I can tell, no competent studies showing they do anything. Especially, we're not talking about N95 type masks, of course. We're talking about, you know, people will say, well, they, you know, why are they required in operating rooms if masks do nothing? Well, it's a different kind of mask than a piece of T-shirt material across someone's face, et cetera. So, but despite all this, we're seeing the kind of mandate crowd pushing forward with their narrative. And I wanted to show a clip from President Biden last week talking about this very subject.
Hold up. I need to correct myself because I called out Washington Post for having a misleading headline. This was actually the New York Times. And it was, we studied 1 million students and it said something like mask work. And then they changed this headline. It now says, this is what we learned about masking. But main point is this was the New York Times, the researchers wrote in, and as you...
Your Amazon account remains uncanceled now. They've just allowed your Amazon account to continue by removing your Washington Post critique. Okay. So, cool. So that said, okay, so with all of these, you know, with this paucity or absolute non-existence of mask mandate studies showing efficacy of mask mandates, we see nevertheless all of these mandates rolling out. And so President Biden spoke on this last week.
Unfortunately, as we've seen throughout this pandemic, some politicians are trying to turn public safety measures, that is children wearing masks in school, into political disputes for their own political gain. Some are even trying to take power away from local educators by banning masks in school. They're setting a dangerous tone. For example, last week at a school board meeting in Tennessee, protesters threatened doctors and nurses who were testifying making the case for masking children in schools. The intimidation and the threats we're seeing across the country are wrong. They're unacceptable. And I've said before, this isn't about politics. It's about keeping our children safe. It's about taking on the virus together, united. I've made it clear that I'll stand with those who are trying to do the right thing. Last week, I called school superintendents in Florida and Arizona to thank them for doing the right thing and requiring masks in their schools. One of them said, "We teach science, so we follow the science." The other said, "They have a guiding principle, students first." I just couldn't agree more with what they both said. And that's why today I'm directing the Secretary of Education, an educator himself, to take additional steps to protect our children. This includes using all of his oversight authorities and legal action, if appropriate, against governors who are trying to block and intimidate local school officials and educators. And as I said before, if you aren't going to fight COVID-19, at least get out of the way of everyone else who's trying. You know, we're not going to sit by as governors try to block and intimidate educators protecting our children. For example, if a governor wants to cut the pay of a hardworking education leader who requires masks in a classroom, the money from the American Rescue Plan can be used to pay that person's salary, 100%.
One little problem with what Joe Biden said about governors trying to ban masks in schools is that there are no governors trying to ban masks in schools. A total of zero. Zero out of 50 states have governors trying to ban masks in schools, and that's exactly the language that he used. But not just him, also teachers' unions over the last week repeated the language that certain people were trying to ban masks in schools. No, one side is for the option of masks, and the other side is for mandates. So it's no one's in the ban category. Everyone is either mandate or let families decide. And there you have Randy Weingarten.
Randy Weingarten repeated it at least twice on Twitter. She got ratioed pretty crazy ratio on these tweets. CNN shared the clip that we just shared with the quote from Biden saying that that they're trying to ban masks, but there was no indication of, well, they're not actually trying to ban the masks. They're banning mask mandates. It's interesting. A lot of people, or some people on social media, tried to push back saying, oh, it's the same thing. You know what we're talking about. But no, banning masks is different from banning mask mandates. Allowing people to choose. Yeah. I mean, that's like saying, what if a governor were to say, you can't, I'm going to ban stay-at-home orders. And what if someone were to respond to that by saying, oh, well, now I can't sleep in my house anymore because you banned stay-at-home orders? I'm not being forced to be in my home, so that means I can't sleep at home anymore? I mean, that wouldn't make any sense.
It's such a disingenuous argument. As I put on Twitter, I am against beer mandates, but that doesn't mean I'm against beer. I'm actually pro-beer, but I'm against beer mandates. See, you see the difference? I can, as one of the Twitter respondents said, we'll write it in crayon if that makes it easier for you to understand the difference between you can be against banning something and still for that same thing. So, you know, you can be against coercion, in other words, and still for free choice and still have your own choice about whether or not to do something. That's what I really meant. But so that said, the federal footprint of this continues. It's not just Joe Biden, but also in The Hill, the story about Cardona, the education secretary, Miguel Cardona, saying that he's, quote, prepared to launch investigations with the department's Office for Civil Rights in response to states that have implemented bans on mask mandates for students. The idea that it would threaten someone's civil rights by not banning their ability or their classmates' ability to be maskless. Like, their civil rights is threatened by too few mandates. Like, we're going to need more behavioral mandates. We're going to force more behavior on people as a way to protect civil rights.
You're infringing on argument.
Yes.
You're infringing on my personal liberty by not forcing me to do something that I could otherwise do myself. I mean, it's just so
Or they would say
distorted.
By not forcing other people to do stuff, right? By not forcing other... Usually, you would prevent someone from doing something that would hurt your civil rights, right? Like, you would prevent them from, you know, letting a person sit at the lunch counter, you know, based on their race or something like that. So that is an action that would be bad, that would hurt your civil rights, and you're there to stop that action. No, this says you need to force someone to do something to protect my civil rights. I have not heard this argument before, and perhaps someone can enlighten me if this is a part of jurisprudence in America in the past about we need to force more behavior to protect civil rights. At any rate, so
it just seems completely backwards. I mean, if anything, people could make a better argument that you're infringing on my civil liberties by forcing me to do something.
Right.
Like wear a mask at school every day.
And so just to give people a sense of what some parents are saying about this, we saw a school board meeting in Wisconsin, which a bunch of parents, talk about ratioed. Boy, this at the school board meeting, the school board got ratioed by the parents who are up there at the microphone. And you'll notice in the middle of the clip, there's one parent who takes an opposite view and listen to what he says. But this is from a Wisconsin school board meeting about masks.
I will not allow my son to be forced into wearing a mask through intimidation, isolation, or peer pressure. We owe nobody an explanation why it is the right choice for us.
In the packet I just gave you, you'll see photos of students, staff, and administrators gathering in the school building all summer without masks, just as many of you in this room. What kind of message is that giving our kids? Rules for thee and not for me. Thank you for your time and consideration. I am much more worried about the organisms growing on these cloth masks that are worn for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, than a virus with a 99.98% survival rate in children.
Right now, I see you in Madison, at the Wisconsin University Hospital, is at 95% full. At St. Mary's, it's 100% full. They are turning people away. That is right down the road.
I worked there.
Yeah. Full order, please. As reported on the website.
Oh, I worked there.
Thank you very much.
We are not ignorant. We are seeing that you're trying to control the narrative. The man that was on the screen, did he tell us how many of those people have comorbidities? I am not against you wearing a mask. You have no right to mandate for us.
The greatest threat to school children today doesn't come from COVID. It comes from the woke government officials who think they are all-knowing and all-wise. Well, you are not all-knowing and you are not all-wise. We are here to tell you that we, the parents, will not stand for this again. That's right. And if you try to mandate this on our children, again, we, the parents, will be standing in your way. Thank you for your time.
So you heard the one guy in the middle. He said, actually, these hospitals are turning people away. And someone says, no, that I work at that hospital. We're not turning anybody away. And he's like, well, according to a government website, you are. Those people in the room are like, we work there. We're not turning anybody away. So anyway, so I'll pause now. It's this mask thing. I mean, I was going to talk about vaccines, you know, later. But Corey, we have no evidence vaccines, mask mandates work in schools. We have all of these states making it mandatory. We actually have the state of Oregon now making masks mandatory outdoors, by the way, not just in schools, but at all kinds of outdoor events. The state of Oregon was the first to do this. I can't imagine New York City and San Francisco won't follow suit. The idea that someone would be to the left of them on a subject, on a policy like this, I think must infuriate them. They've got to, I think, solve that gap quickly. But when before have you seen 14 states mandate something for which there's no evidence?
I mean, I don't know. I'm sure the government does stupid stuff all the time without evidence, just based on their feelings. And I mean, what's interesting to me is all of the states that are mandating masks, correct me if I'm wrong, they all have Democrat governors. And all of the states that are allowing all families to choose, regardless of what the districts say, all have Republican governors. So I'm saying... Okay. Texas allows it. Oklahoma allows it. Iowa allows families to choose. South Carolina, Florida, Utah, Arizona.
You're wrong on Michigan. Because Whitmer in Michigan has said districts can decide.
So, no, I'm saying all of the states that allow all families to choose, regardless of what the district says. So Texas, Oklahoma. Those are all Republican governors.
Okay, so you're exempting the ones, I guess we call it in the middle, where the districts can decide on their own. So there's one on one side, the states say, we're forcing you to wear a mask. And on another side, there's states that say, we're going to force mask choice. And then there's a middle ground where districts can make up their own mind between mask choice versus mask mandates. And those could be either party governors. Is that your point?
Yep. Yep. All the dark green ones here are Republicans. All the dark blue are Democrats. And I want to call it forced mask choice. That just kind of doesn't really make any sense. I would just call it allowing all families to choose for their own kids, regardless of what the local school district wants to do.
Okay. All right. It's anyway, I'm surprised that this is brought up so infrequently in the traditional mainstream media. Maybe that's a dumb statement. Maybe I shouldn't be surprised. But this lack of evidence thing is what I'm getting on. And it seems to never be talked about. They seem to repeat this as if this is some kind of mantra. Well, I guess if I may, I'll just move on to then this idea of vaccines, which is something that I kind of had an epiphany this week when I started thinking to myself, wow, people are conflating something that I've never really thought about. If you think about being vaccinated against a disease and the vaccine's effective, what you think to yourself is that, well, the virus won't actually ever become a part of my body, or if I breathe it in, I'll just breathe it right out again, and so I won't transmit it either. People, including me, I think, are conflating two things: a vaccine's effectiveness with preventing sickness, conflated with a vaccine's effectiveness at preventing transmission. We kind of, I think, kind of without maybe thinking about it, assumed that you're just kind of completely immune to a vaccine, to transmitting a vaccine, if you are immune to getting sick from the vaccine. And yet the evidence seems to not say that the vaccine seems to allow, you can be 100% free of symptoms, you can be vaccinated, and yet you can still thoroughly transmit this virus to someone else. The transmission is not the same as being vaccinated against sickness. That's a different thing. So when these discussions come up of mandating a vaccine on someone else, in other words, we're allowed to take risks for ourselves. We're allowed to go bungee jumping. It's considered dangerous. But you know, if it's your choice, it'll hurt you. You're allowed to go jumping out of an airplane, go skydiving. It may be highly risky for you, but if you're taking that risk, it's up to you. And if you hurt yourself, that's part of the risk. The reason we feel much more comfortable in mandating other people do something like vaccines isn't about their own bodily risk. It's about the sense that by mandating them to be vaccinated, they won't transmit it to others, maybe unsuspecting people, maybe children under 12, something like that. It's the transmission argument, not the Sickman argument, that undergirds the vaccine mandate concept. And yet what we're seeing is new information implying that this vaccine is not stopping transmission, especially, and this is the subpoint under it, when it comes to the Delta variant. So I have a couple of stories on that that I came across, and I thought, oh my gosh, do people know this? Do they know the vaccine may be really effective at keeping from getting sick and yet not effective at keeping you from transmitting? How does that affect the mandates? And so first I looked at this MyNorthwest.com, which is a virologist, a Georgetown virologist, it quotes, the title being "Vaccines Don't Stop Delta Variant Transmission. Virologist warns, new evidence from the CDC." It says, indicates that the Delta variant of COVID-19 is highly transmissible, comparable in its rate of transmission to other highly contagious diseases such as chickenpox. And it mentions a July 30th interview in which it quotes this Dr. Rasmussen, who is the Georgetown virologist, saying the main reason why this is concerning is it suggests that people who are vaccinated and who become infected with the Delta variant may be capable of transmitting the virus to other people. Hmm. And so then I found one story which is contrary to that, saying, and I'm just being fair here, saying mounting evidence suggests COVID vaccines do reduce transmission. And yet, when you look into that detail, it actually cites a Public Health England. It's an English study, a large study of COVID-19 transmission involving more than 365,000 households. And it's found that immunization with either the Pfizer or AstraZeneca vaccine resulted in a reduced chance of virus transmission by 40 to 60%. So even the story saying that the vaccine is effective at reducing transmission only says it's effective by lowering it by about half, but you can still fully transmit the disease if vaccinated, according to both of these stories. I created this thing, speaking of my crayon analogy before, this page that says a vaccine's ability to reduce symptoms does not equal a vaccine's ability to reduce transmission. These are different things, I wrote in Crayola crayons there to explain this to people. And so I was surprised to learn all this, and it seems to me the ability to force someone else to get a shot falls apart very much if you find out that even those who get the shot can still transmit the virus. What do you think about all that, Corey?
So what is the, I guess your
there's
argument
an edifice
is
on which this, my argument is there's an edifice on which these, I'm going to force you to take the shot argument is built. That edifice says the way I can force you to take the shot, like if you want to enter a restaurant in New York City, mm-hmm. for example, or San Francisco, we're going to force you to take these shots. And the reason that we feel justified in forcing you to take these shots is because if you don't, you might transmit the virus. Oh, wait, you mean the new information is that you actually still transmit the virus?
So I now it's real. So yeah. So I mean, if you can still transmit the virus, if that's the case, that reduces the argument that you're doing this to protect someone else, that you're mandating it to protect someone else. And so now the argument is, I guess, yeah, I mean, that takes away that part of the argument, right?
Yeah, a coercive argument to say, I'm going to take control of your own personal medical decisions. How can I justify making personal medical decisions for you if you want to participate in society by essentially forcing you to take a shot if you want to go to almost any indoor location in New York City, for example? Or if you want to even be a teacher in some places where teachers are being forced to take shots. The reason we're justified in forcing these shots in your arm, whether you like it or not, unless you want to lose your job or never go to a restaurant or never go to a hair salon or all kinds of other indoor places, the reason we're justified is because of transmission. The fact we want to stop transmission of this virus. My friends who argue for these shots to me, they talk about transmission of the virus. That's why we, in their mind, it's okay to make someone else take a shot, because it's a global pandemic and we're trying to stop this virus from spreading to other people. They are not basing the argument to force you to take a shot on the idea that you might get sick and I'm just worried about you. Because in all kinds of other ways, we let people take risks with their own bodies. And that is, we're accustomed to that. That's not the basis on which we're forcing jabs. We're forcing jabs because we say we're worried about transmission. Well, if it turns out there's all kinds of transmission happening, even those who are vaccinated, and by the way, that vaccine also degrades in its effectiveness over 3 to 6 months. Now, the argument to force you to take a shot against your own medical autonomy is undermined.
Yep. At the same time, though, the second article we brought up, that study showed a reduction in transmission. So it wasn't a complete elimination, but I think that kind of bolsters their argument that when it comes to mandatory vaccines, because that still reduces it somewhat.
I take your point. I actually think both articles do imply, if you read them in total, both articles actually do imply that there could be a lessened, there could still be some reduced transmission. Because even the first article from the My Northwest quotes the Georgetown virologist who says, her language is, the vaccine doesn't prevent transmission. She leaves open the possibility the vaccine reduces transmission. But nevertheless, my point here is that as we start to now become bean counters to decide, well, how much reduced transmission does it take to make someone else do something they don't want to do against their will in terms of taking a shot in their body? I think once we start, you know, it's not as if it's, reducing, if it's still half as likely to transmit the virus to someone else, even if you've just recently gotten a vaccine, I mean, that's not all that effective. It'd be one thing, you know, I think your point or maybe the devil's advocacy point that it still reduces transmission some, you know, maybe if it was maybe if the Delta were a lot smaller, I think that could be more valid. If instead of 100%, instead of 0% virus transmission among the vaccinated, it becomes 3% virus transmission among the vaccinated, I think you could say, okay, well, that's rounding off. That's still more or less stopping transmission. When it's something like half as much, you can still, that means there's going to be continuing to be all kinds of transmission just as we move forward, especially adding that second factor, which is the waning value of the vaccination over time. That's another factor that these two things didn't bring up. So anyway, I just bring this up because I don't hear these discussed in most mainstream media discussions of this. So I don't hear, when it comes to the mask issue, I don't hear the fact that there are no mask studies showing mask mandates in schools work. I don't hear that brought up. And when it comes to the vaccination issue, I don't hear it. Everything is cited in terms of your odds of reducing illness and this odds of reducing transmission is almost always left out of those conversations.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. So I want to go over some positive things that have happened over the past week. And the day after our show last week, I was in Pennsylvania in Harrisburg for an event to introduce or have a press conference for House Bill 1 out there in Pennsylvania, which would be a universal education savings account program, allowing all families, regardless of income, to take their children's education dollars to a private school, a homeschool option, charter school, any approved education provider. So this is a monumental bill, and we had a pretty interesting, successful press conference. And I wanted to share a clip from the primary sponsor, Representative Andrew Lewis. I think you'll appreciate this part of the clip. I certainly appreciate it. You can see me in the corner on the right in this video, too.
But if the time has finally come to break down the barriers to an excellent education and focus in Pennsylvania on funding students, not unaccountable systems. And so we're here very excited to announce House Bill 1. I'm here along with several co-sponsors of the bill. House Bill 1 is the Excellent Education for All Act, And it's going to ensure that every student in Pennsylvania, regardless of their zip code or their socioeconomic status, can access a world-class education and pursue and achieve their American dream.
All right. So, yeah, we House Bill 1 would be monumental. It's in committee right now. I believe it's in the House Education Committee in Pennsylvania. I put a link to it just now. But if you even wanted to Google it, Pennsylvania House Bill 1, you'll be able to find more information to be able to contact your legislators to let them know that you either support or don't support this proposal to fund students as opposed to systems. So that I saw that as a victory. It wasn't an actual vote, but it generated some positive press on the idea. The other thing is that Arizona, I talked about this at the beginning of the show, but Arizona opened their portal on their website to allow families to take $7,000 to a private school if their public schools close, mandate masks, or subject their kids to other COVID constraints. So if you go to this thread on Twitter, I put a link to the application. You can find more information about how you can qualify. One of the things is that you have to have meet a certain income threshold to be able to be eligible for these funds. Mm-hmm. I think it would be better to make it universal, but and for everybody, regardless of income. But this is still, I would argue, a step in the right direction, allowing more families to access these alternatives. So you can go here if you qualify to the apply button based on this thread, which I'll put into the chat.
I mean, I would just, it bears saying that in the Pennsylvania example you gave first with the clip, you have Governor Wolf in Pennsylvania, who is unlikely to sign an expansion of school choice that bill was arguing for, I think. But nevertheless, it's always great to be in front of the press. You always have the effect of more people hearing about the idea of school choice than had heard of it before and spreading, and as well as the possibility sometimes even governors end up signing bills that you wouldn't think they would sign and they surprise you.
Yeah, I mean, we should still push it forward and try to get it to Governor Wolf's desk because it is possible. He could sign it into law. And then two, it's valuable to see where people stand on the issue of school choice. Just because you have an R or a D next to your name doesn't mean that you are guaranteed to vote a particular way. So it would be nice to be able to see where people stand on this issue of universal education choice in Pennsylvania. And it would be, and who knows, Governor Wolf's not going to be the governor forever. We don't know if the next governor is going to be a Democrat or Republican or someone who supports school choice or not. So it is still valuable to push this forward and see where people stand on the issue. One other state with kind of this good news, which who knows how it's going to turn out, is California. California is a state that has no private school choice programs, but they do have two ballot initiatives as of yesterday to fund students instead of systems. These would be universal education savings account programs for $13,000 or $14,000 per student. They differ slightly. One is universal right away. The other one is universal over time, where it starts low income and then it kind of, the eligibility creeps up after a few years and then everybody is eligible after 5 years, I want to say. But these are something to look for towards. I'll put into the chat two big ballot initiatives in California that would be statewide for all families, either immediately or over time.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, I have a rather maybe bold prediction for California. I actually think Governor Newsom will be replaced in this recall election. I'm predicting that now. And so, you know, it's almost neck and neck right now, but the momentum has been all toward replacing Governor Newsom. So a new governor like a Larry Elder or someone else could easily sign the very legislation you're referring to. I wanted to quickly bring up, this is kind of back on COVID again, but it's a little different. It's just to say that, you know, in this landscape, where we have some of the country talking about, just go along with these minor measures. Is it that hard to wear a mask? And the other half of the country saying, you keep moving the goalposts, and we're tired of that. I wanted to bring up the story about a Washington State public school that is now forcing girls, student athletes, maybe it's not just the girls, to wear ankle bracelets, ankle monitors for the purpose of COVID segregation. They basically want to check how much social distancing is happening between the athletes. And this is not optional. This is not a private school. This is a public school that says, oh, you want to be a student athlete? We're going to force you to wear an ankle bracelet so that we can monitor how close you come to each other. Look, is this exactly the end of the world? Probably not. But I made up a goalpost van lines meme of a truck with the giant goalpost van lines on the side.
Hey,
the idea of moving the goalpost yet again. And it seems to keep happening. So I don't know what you think about this, Corey, but this not optional for those athletes.
Well, I think there are a few states that are requiring student athletes to get the vaccines. Is that for high risk sports is what they're calling it, like football and basketball, where you get really close to each other.
I guess this makes me think of an ex-con. Bracelet? This is like someone on parole or something. Not even parole. Somebody who's at home arrest.
Yeah.
I don't know. It sounds so
volleyball brotherly to me. I mean, I guess what they're trying to do with this is to see how close, you said they're seeing how close you get to the other athletes. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out how close volleyball athletes are when they're practicing. It just seems strange to introduce an ankle monitor into all this. It's just really a dystopian nightmare.
This is starting to use technology to monitor our every movement. And so that this is now public schools. Yep, you got to go along. Got to go along. Like, if you'd have said this a month ago, I bet this will be the next phase. They might make students start to wear ankle bracelets to check whether they're social distancing. How quickly would someone be accused of a conspiracy, crazy conspiracy theory? Oh, we're not doing that. What even? No one's going to do that. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, we're just going to keep seeing more of this, I think, going forward. And it does seem like they are starting to look at extracurricular activities, because then they could say, well, we're not forcing you to do this, that, the other. You have a choice to play sports or not, but
that's what they'll say.
Yeah, that's their argument. So they're picking on the extracurriculars.
Meanwhile, they're using the sports kids as the kind of soft introduction, right? And so what do you bet if this goes through, parents don't complain? Well, why don't we just kind of monitor all the students? Shouldn't their social distancing be monitored as well? I guess. Okay, now they all have to wear these things. I don't know. Is it that hard to predict? Is that hard to imagine? Not me.
Oh, did you see Randy Weingarten essentially bragging or essentially giving the game away when it came to the COVID relief funding and how they're just spending it on more employees? She tweeted about this. This was her tweet. In plans submitted to the U.S. Department of Education, states are detailing how they will use COVID-19 relief funding to recruit and retain teachers, including strengthening the teacher pipeline through Grow Your Own programs. So hold up. This COVID relief funding was supposed to be meant for opening schools safely.
Yeah.
And they're essentially openly admitting, gotcha, we're just spending it on what we always wanted, putting more people into the buildings so that we could have more dues-paying members and more political power.
Sure. There was a suburban Chicago district that had filed an intent to strike, a 10-day notice intent to strike. Well, they ended up having a negotiation with the district and solving it, and et cetera. There are all kinds of stories like that where it looks like they're basically saying they're eyeing this big pot of money some of these states and districts have now they didn't have before, and are coming up with new sets of demands for raises, et cetera. It's the sense of like, give us a raise so we can be safe.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's essentially what it is. And Chicago's been interesting to watch. I mean, we'll probably have more news on this next week, because the Chicago public school students are supposed to return on Monday, August 30th, which is this coming Monday. But there's a lot of complaining from the Chicago's teachers union right now, and they say they don't have a deal with the district. And one of the big points of disagreement is that the teachers union wants an arbitrary metric to trigger all of the closure of schools like they had last year. Something they had last year, which I think was ridiculous, was a 3% community-wide positivity rate to trigger the closure of all the schools, regardless of how well your school was doing, and regardless of the fact that community-wide positivity rates are different from school-wide positivity rates.
Sure.
And that studies have over and over again found that the positivity rates in the schools are safer, and that the kids are safer in the schools when it comes to COVID-19 than in the overall community. So we'll see what happens with that. But I expect some sort of nonsense to brew up next week.
Yeah. All right. Well, perhaps we'll close with this. I don't know if you have anything else, Corey, after this. But one of the recent stars, I guess, to emerge on YouTube in the COVID era in terms of hosting shows about news is Tim Pool. The great Corey DeAngelis, once being a guest on the Tim Pool show. But I noticed, found an interesting soundbite coming out of it, that there's a guest, Delano Squires, who appeared on the Tim Pool show, who was, he kind of weighed in some way on the position of Corey DeAngelis versus the teachers unions regarding school choice advocacy and who was more effective. But yet, in a way, he didn't. So we'll let our viewers and listeners decide on whether Mr. Squires... Well, exactly what he's saying.
We already shouted out Michael Malice. Shout him out again. He's very optimistic. He says, these people are so dumb. How could you possibly be pessimistic? And I'm like, it's not a bad point, you know. But zombies are dumb, and a lot of zombies can overrun a city, you know. So
that's true. My hope is that eventually people's eyes will open. So whether it's foreign policy in Afghanistan, whether it's people who were saying defund the police last year, saying refund the police this year, all of these issues, the socialist who fires all of his employees who want to unionize.
That was so good.
What I'm hoping is that people see that the people that we think are elites and the smartest people in our society have no idea what they're doing. And honestly, in many respects, like we were talking about homeschooling, nobody has done more to advocate and advance the cause of school choice and homeschooling than the teachers' unions. They have done a way better job of promoting homeschooling than any GOP politician ever could. Mm-hmm. So when you see how not just corrupt, but incompetent the leadership class is, it'll make people say, you know what? Why should I listen to these people? They have no idea what they're talking about anything. So.
Boom.
He says no one has done more to promote homeschooling and school choice than the teachers union. So, Corey, I don't know if that's a shot at you, but you do have 4 months left in 2021 to try to make up that gap. But I think as we are where we sit right now, Mr. Squires is saying the teachers unions are outworking it when it comes to promotion of school choice.
Yeah, I think he's right. He probably got that from my Twitter feed. I just looked real quick and I saw that Delano is actually following me. I just followed him back. So shout out, Delano. Thank you for the calling out the teachers unions on the Tim Pool show. Yeah, but I think he's right. I think he's right that Randy unintentionally beat me at promoting school choice over this past year. And that's a beautiful thing that the teachers unions are actively working to destroy their own empire.
Well, thanks everybody for watching this episode of Random Assignment. I don't know what episode number it is. It's probably, I don't know. What would you guess? 45 or something 50, like that?
Yeah, I was going to say 50 or maybe 40.
Okay. At any rate, this has been Random Assignment. Hey, please sign up for that Choice Media weekly Friday email. It's the best in the business. And please share, like, and subscribe.
Yeah, and if you want to continue the fight for funding students, not systems, Go to fundstudentsnotsystems.org to join the fight to pass legislation to fund students directly as opposed to close government school buildings. Thank you guys so much for checking us out on the Random Assignment Podcast. We'll talk to you guys next week.